Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix. On February the 21st, 2008, newcomers should look into cuttingthroughthematrix.com, that's cuttingthroughthematrix.com, and download previous talks that fill in so many of the little pieces of the jigsaw puzzle. It truly is a jigsaw puzzle. It didn't happen by chance. Someone cut up the board and have been in charge of all the pieces all along and guiding every faction towards the same point. Also, look into Alan Watt Sentient Sentinel.eu, where you can find transcripts of those talks in the different languages of Europe. You print them up, pass them around to your friends. And don't be angry with your friends when they can't understand you. They're still in the old paradigm, the old understanding of the world is just fine, it's just evolving, and the media would tell us if there was something terrible going to happen. In reality, terrible things happen all the time. The media's job is to make them more palatable by softening up the message for the public. It can tell you the most horrible things in the nicest possible way. And when it's all mixed together with trivia and the boob babes, and the Hollywood goings on, it's all surrealistic anyway. Things become bizarre, very, very, very bizarre the way it's put to you. Surrealistic is the term really for it, where you're in some kind of weird dream. So don't get afraid to tell your friends, but on the other hand, don't push it because you'll lose them very quickly. And it's no different than someone who just found religion, who suddenly tries to bring everyone they know into their newfound happiness, only to find out that they start getting shut out because they become overbearing. It's no different when you have all of this information and you've done your homework and you want to unload on the people to help them, to save them too, and you find out they will shut you out as well. There's too much to handle all at once. As long as that TV can be switched on, and their favorite programs come on, that there are sitcoms and so on, then the world must be all right. That's how they see it. I saw this back in the 70s, big time in Britain. That was a great time for traveling the world and observing the different countries. To notice as well, as you're passing through them, that the same laws were being passed in every country at the same time by their own governments, which always led the public of that country in each country to think there was a sort of national type deal that was going on, not realizing there was a bigger hand guiding all of them. But I also saw, when I came back to Britain on different occasions, the massive upheaval that the closing down of factories and businesses caused amongst the public, which in Britain became pretty well a welfare state run by the welfare system. Again, well managed, and saw that this foreseen by those who were bringing it all about. Long, long before that, obviously, they had the apparatus set up to take care of it. And they opened up the pubs all day long. They did away with the usual closing hours during the day because they wanted to keep the youth drunk and content, chasing sex and all the usual things that you chase when you're young, rather than have them demonstrating or marching in the streets. And that's what Thatcher said. That's why she passed the laws to keep the pubs open. I also saw people in the streets that I lived in get tremendously depressed when they lost their work. Some people committed suicide. It was going through the roof. And yet, when you turned on that television set, you'd think that everything was just hunky-dory. On came the usual comedy sitcoms, the usual programs, all the American detective stories that would replay in Britain. And as long as the routine was established and kept going, the public seemed to turn a blind eye to what was happening next door or two or three houses down, when people were going through tremendous strife and poverty. And people were afraid, almost like bad karma, they're afraid to go near those people in case they catch it and lose their jobs too. It was a strange phenomenon to observe. And yet we see the same thing happening in America as well, North America, and in fact across the world, is they bring us down into a new feudal system. The feudal system that Professor Carl Quigley talked about in his book Tragedy and Hope, this new society that has many helpers, many different kinds of helpers, including their own religious helpers, the New Age phenomena. It's all geared towards bringing in this new feudal society, with the corporations being the feudal overlords. However, every overlord, like the old lords, were always subservient to a main king. And I'm sure these overlords, too, the CEOs, are kept in line to make sure they don't do too much looting off their own businesses. They've got to obey their boss. There's always a boss above them. And there's definitely guiding forces and panels and organizations that run this whole agenda that intermeshes so perfectly in every facet of life. Not only so, it plans the culture. It has planned and run the culture industry for an awful long time, but never so efficiently, really, as the last 50 or 60 years. People become the culture that's promoted to them via television and Hollywood. And I've talked before about this, how in the 60s they had a meeting in Britain with the Council on Foreign Relations and the Royal Institute for International Affairs, where they discussed which country would be given the task of promoting a world culture. Now, that was for music and for drama, like movies and so on. And it was a toss-up between California and London at the time, the Pinewood Studios and different cinema organizations there. And it was decided that Hollywood would be given the task of promoting the culture, knowing the herd simply follow. Not a new discovery. Plato talked about it in the Republic. The people mimic what they see. And, you know, going back even to the Victorian era, in the Victorian era, they put out vaudeville-type houses for the general public when they began to give them, or at least some of them, more free time. They didn't work the usual 16 hours per day. They cut it down to about 12. And to stop people getting into mischief, the working people, and discussing things and discussing problems and doing something about it, they gave them vaudeville shows and so on. Body acts, they call them, B-A-W-D-Y. And the whole thing was very similar, and it gave them music that would suit their class, in fact. Popular music, they called it at the time, the first time the term popular music. And people would come out of those theatres whistling or singing or humming the tunes, the very simple tunes that they were given, tunes that had been reinforced by watching the drama enacted in the musical on stage, purposely made for particular classes and made very inexpensive. The same system was carried out across the entire Western world by the same ruling elite running it. We've always been so perfectly understood that it's rather terrifying at times to realize that we're scientifically run. It's all by science and behaviorism. Behavior modification is a simple, very simple part of it in this day and age, because the herd especially is more understood. And they call it the herd in the high institutions. We are the herd. Even medicine calls us the herd. When they talk about plagues and so on and outbreaks, they call it herd management. It shouldn't surprise us, really, when you think about it, because we're living in this new, beautiful system where scientific dictatorship is coming to the fore. This is an article, in fact, I'm going to read now on this particular topic, and it's from The Telegraph, and it's from the 14th of February 2008 by Roger Highfield, science editor. It says, crowds pick leaders to follow. People in crowds behave just like sheep, scientists claim, by blindly following one or two people who seem to know where they are going. Then it goes on to say, like ants, humans are easily led. Researchers at Leeds University believe their findings could have important applications, notably in the management of disasters. Now, that's just one sideline to it. The team led by Professor Jens Cross conducted a series of experiments in which volunteers were told to walk randomly around a large hall without talking to each other. A select few were then given more detailed instructions. Results published today show that it takes a minority of just 5% of what they called informed individuals to influence the direction of a crowd of a minimum of 200 people. The remaining herd, and it says herd, of 95% follow without realizing it. There are strong parallels with animal grouping behavior, says Professor Krause, who reports the work with John Dyer in the Animal Behavior Journal with colleagues at the universities of Oxford and Wales, Bangor. We've all been in situations where we get swept along by the crowd, but what's interesting about this research is that our participants ended up making a consensus decision despite the fact that they weren't allowed to talk or gesture to one another. In most cases, the participants didn't realize they were being led by others. And that's interesting in itself, isn't it? The work follows another study by Dr. Simon Rieder of Utrecht University that showed that most of us are happy to play follow my leader even if we are trailing after someone who does not really know where they're going. Isn't that the truth? Even more striking, that study found that even when we are shown a faster route, we still prefer to stick with the old one and tell others to take the long road too. Again, that's what we find. When people are trying to be different, the herd will try and bring you in, even if they don't know where they're going. That discovery could have lethal implications when it comes to evacuating a building or a ship in an emergency, when people would likely stick to the familiar evacuation route, even if slower than an alternative. So, there you go. You know, these studies are done all the time. This isn't really a new study. It's only another one being done along the similar lines, because we are the most studied species on the planet. I don't think there's any insect or animal studied so much as we have been for thousands and thousands of years. And that's why we have this tremendous interest in people. Tyrants especially have tremendous interest in people because they need to understand how the masses think or don't think, in fact. They have to know how to manipulate the minds of all of their minions. And unfortunately, as I say, most people like to belong to the big group, and they like to belong to any group, actually, as long as they'll take them. And once in, they learn the customs, rituals, etc., when to speak, when not to speak. And everyone else will keep you in line if you try and do something different. That's the problem with the herd. Uniformity is the term. Everyone wants to be uniform. Now, I think we've got a call already coming in here. And it's from, I think it's Dave in British Columbia. Yeah, you're there, Dave?
Hi, Al.
Hello.
Hi, I called yesterday and I was talking about the mercury and autism.
Yes.
A caller that was interested in the name of the website there. I'll give you the spelling of the guy's name.
Yeah.
David Ayoub. It's A-Y-O-U-B. And the name of the video is Mercury, Autism, and the Global Vaccine Agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And he has some really good points and some documentation on what happened in around 72 and 74 with studies done on world population.
Yeah.
And how it was basically an urgent, immediate measure to be taken to reduce fertility in 1974.
I've no doubt on it. I've no doubt. The whole, when you understand the big, I'm going to read an article later about population reduction from one of the biggest organizations now mandating we push ahead and do it by force. When you realize these organizations have been in existence for about 100 years and have had annual meetings and then multiple meetings within each year on this very problem, we shouldn't be surprised when so many things that we take for granted are actually parts of an agenda to fulfill their part of the agenda. They don't get paid big money and work for 100 years in these big foundations to sit on their hands and make wish lists, they find ways to introduce their schemes into the public domain and to make them work. And you're quite right. It's the same with the cholesterol bogus nonsense. I mean, cholesterol is essential for healthy brain neurons. And most of your brain is composed of it.
Right.
And especially for men, you need it too for fertility. You cannot get healthy sperm without a good intake of cholesterol.
Right.
And so, and they know this, and that's why they went the anti-cholesterol route, trying to bring out fancy diets and starve us from cholesterol. It's all to do with bringing down the population.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty obvious. You can see it pretty clearly once you start to read the documents. It's kind of disturbing, and it's you have to be pretty insane to start thinking along the lines like these guys do.
You realize you're dealing with people who are religious in nature. They have their own religion, and they're zealots with their religion. And it's a sort of nature-type worship. It's also eugenics-type worship. They believe they are superior. They believe they are the ultimate creation, and that they have the right to control the rest of us.
Right.
I'll be back with more after the following messages. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Al.
Hi folks, I am Alan Watt, back with Cutting Through the Matrix. And what a matrix it is indeed, of deceptions and false routes and many corridors. We have Lee from Texas on the line. Are you there, Lee?
Alan, hi, how are you?
Not so bad.
Excellent to talk to you again. Hey, I wanted to, have other people, at least in my state. Hopefully at some point I can run into Andrea up in Dallas and a couple other people in that way, and we can sit there and talk. Yeah, I know we're supposed to live inside our own head. It gets lonely in there.
I know. It does get incredibly lonely. Yeah, it's like a miracle when you meet someone that's on the same wavelength and who's informed. Yeah.
And who's in the same, you know, probably staring at the same sky they're spraying. You know, and that whole thing. And something interesting, and, you know, as far as like the waking up thing, and also to Tim in North Carolina, I'm not trying to judge a book by its cover, but, you know, having lived there, I know he's probably hit to some of the country music. This is one of the results from reading your books, is the fact that, you know, your head never stops. I mean, it'll wear you out. And one of the things I was sitting there listening, there's a song, I don't know if you're familiar with it or not, but like I said, it's for Tim. There's a John Anderson tune called Straight Tequila Night. And in there, since I know he's read your books, he'll get it. It talks about, you know, playing on the jukebox. Her favorite song is K-13, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And something else, like I said, I feed strays, and so I'm sitting there, like I said, my head's going 90 miles a minute, and I'm reaching down to pet this cat. And you talk about the Pope wearing, or not the Pope, sorry, the Pharaoh's wearing two hats. And I got thinking about, like, Dr. Seuss and the kid's stories. The Cat in the Hat wore a red and white hat.
That's right.
You know.
That's right. And so did the Pharaohs of ancient Egypt.
And, yeah, it just, and so, yeah, I mean, again, it's Lenin or whoever talking about, you know, give us the kids and we'll just, you know, or the goats or the sheep, whatever you want to call it. You know,
yep.
But it's astounding. And it just, you know, again, I thank you again, but it's you just don't look at anything the same anymore. I mean.
And it's pretty well, it's all through the system. It's all through your culture and even your popular books and so on. We're being conned all the time by people who have their own little language. Yeah.
Now, I don't listen in real time very often just because I don't have the internet and the local radio stations. I tend to drive out of the range. But something else is just the whole, the whole thing. I mean, you're just driving around, and something I've heard you touch on. Sorry, I get excited. But I've heard you talk about Jung in the past, and we know that his father was a high Mason.
Yeah.
I was in the Masons up until just third degree Blue Lodge. Did my father actually become like a worshipful master and everything? Now, he's a devout Christian, and he's finally starting to go, oh, wow, you know, this stuff is just not adding up. And I'm like, well, wait till I show you about your own dogma, Pop. But, you know, and they had these guys that came in when I was raised up, if you will, to the third degree, called the Sons of Hiram, that were these, you know, reenactors or whatever. And I don't remember that much about the thing other than the fact that they, you know, knock you in the head with a mallet and pull you back up, you know. They had, you know, the guy that supposedly told on the Masons, what was his name, something Morgan?
That's right, Morgan. He was killed, yeah.
And yet they turn around and name a rum after him and market it, right?
Of course. And, of course, it's dark rum for the dark forces, yeah.
Yeah,
I know.
It's just, you know, so... If you don't run, if you run like that whole thing I've heard you tell Tim again, is that, you know, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king.
Yep.
And that sounds so warped, but it's like you want to find some other kings or other one-eyed folks like yourself just to go, okay, otherwise I'm on the verge of going mad just because I don't fit in what, you know, they call society.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what they call the norm. So
that's right, yeah.
That being said, one other thing, I went back and listened to your Christmas blurb, and I used to play, I mean, just drums, it's not really a musician thing, I just beat things with sticks, but, you know, it's the, just going back, and I didn't thank you at the time, but that story, well, first of all, the piece that you played for us was just astounding, and especially when you consider what they tried to do to your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, thank you for a wonderful gift. And on that also, I don't remember if you touched on it or somebody else that was talking about at the various premieres of the classical piece, I can't remember who the composer was, but Rites of Spring, didn't they riot?
Yeah, there was riots. They were trying lots of different sounds back in those days to see what the effect on the audience and disharmonics and so on that would make your... It's like pulling your nails down a blackboard. It puts the hair up the back of your neck, and they found that people were getting irritable and argumentative, and even some of them were getting violent. So they did a lot of experimentation, absolutely, with these big composers back then. Yeah.
And yet nobody, you know, like you tell somebody, well, again, like we've all said, you can't even get somebody to look up at the sky.
You can. Again, it's the herd instinct. You see, when you have no survival in a herd, there's always a few prime animals that are always on guard. They're the ones who watch everything. They watch out for the herd, and the herd can graze peaceably. When the herd literally have lost all their survival instincts, they're called domesticated, or a domestic herd, and that's how they term humans now, the domesticated herd. They cannot look out for themselves. They expect some of the higher ones to do it all for them, and that's what I was reading from one of Young's pieces last week. There was that very topic when he said, when you're not in charge of your own life, then someone else is.
Sure.
And that's so true, yeah.
Now, something else, I don't know how much time you spent in the southern United States or not, but have you ever seen a southern turkey farm?
No.
Yeah, we used to have them, and the deal is, and we had turkeys in our backyard, I forget how many we had. I think we had 8 or 10, you know, at the most at any given time. But if you took, sorry, I'm sliding into my southern accent. If you built a high fence, these things would fly over and climb on the wood pile. They'd figure some way to soar over the thing. But if you left the thing right about their head height only, they really wouldn't look at it as an obstacle, and they'd just mull around the thing thinking they could walk around it and never get out.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's how it was worked. I remember there was a guy called into a place in Europe because there was a wild boar farm that had been abandoned long ago, and in this area there were wild boars there with the tusks and everything, and they tried everything to catch them, the different ministries of agriculture, and they tried to catch them, they couldn't do it. So eventually one old guy came along with his truck, and he says, give me the money, and 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I'll do it for you. And he simply brought feed in. He parked about half a mile away to let them see him. He'd drop some there and go off, and he kept doing that, and every time they allowed him to get closer and closer, and eventually he was dropping off the feed while he was driving in the piles to put the fence around them, and that took another week and a half to do, and they let him do it. Just gradualism. Yeah.
Just a matter of being patient.
Yep.
And one last thing, and I've heard Andrea touch on it, and you've had a couple of callers, and I believe one of the guys, I try and make notes, one of the guys, a guy named, I think it was Boomer from Michigan, and he was the one talking about we've got to get off this racism thing.
Yeah.
And he's absolutely right. And I mean, and you had another guy call in, and I don't remember his name. I'm horrific with that stuff. But he was another one from Michigan, was the leader of, I thought, like the Detroit Black Panthers. I will stand shoulder to shoulder beside any of these people, mm-hmm. you know, that want to be free. And just,
absolutely.
You know,
absolutely. This is a combined effort. Everyone has to start realizing that we have bigger targets here because we're all targeted. We're all in the cross sites here, the crosshairs, and we're all targeted. And when they're fighting each other, they'll never, ever see the guys at the top pulling the strings.
Yeah. And if I remember right on my history, my father was big into the Southern stuff. People will put Lincoln on their wall about what's a great emancipator, but he only freed people south of the May 6th line.
That's right. That's right.
Well,
okay, thanks for calling. And we'll be back with more after these messages.
Listening to We the People Radio Network.
Hi, folks. Alan Watt back with Cutting Through the Matrix. And it's true enough, this code of silence, the silence between big boys at the top, with their wall between them and us, it can't go on. And of course they know this too. They've already talked about the continuity of government and how they'd scrap any democratic house from existing. They wouldn't need it during that time. And they've even talked about the possibility of not needing it at all. It just gets in the way of progress. They want to rapidly put their whole agenda through into this brave, brave new world and bring us out at the other end under this scientific dictatorship where our betters will plan our whole lives for us from cradle to grave. That's if they allow you to even get born. They might decide you've got inferior genes and they'll just put you down the chute or put you up the old chimney, which is what they do every day in most hospitals across the world. Now we've got Mo in Oregon there. Are you there? Hello? Hello? Is Mo there from Oregon?
Yes. This is Mo. Can you hear me good?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. Thank you very much for taking my call, Mr. Allen. You know, I would like to talk about the first wave of world collapsing cities, that the collapse would be caused by a combination of falling ecosystem, human-enhanced environmental catastrophe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I know all the agencies that promote it because that's their whole agenda, is to drum it through our heads. There's simply too many of us, so as we start reducing the population by force. And I have a whole bunch of articles from the top institutions, which are all led by Harvard professors and various other professors, but they go under the guise of non-governmental organizations, even though they're funded by the big foundations. So there's thousands of them. I mean, this is a whole supra-government that's been set up over 100-odd years while the people were fast asleep, you know? Hello? I think he's gone. But boy, jump into James from New York City.
Hi, Alan.
Hello, James. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I heard you mention or touch on this briefly one time in the past. I was watching an episode of good old Andy Griffith from Mayberry.
Yeah.
In this particular episode, it actually took place in Andy's lodge. I think it was called The Order of the Golden Door, something silly like that.
Yeah.
Him and all his buddies all wore the fez hats, like the Shriners. Yeah. What is the meaning? What's the esoteric meaning behind the fez hat?
The fez hat was adopted after Napoleon went in to fight in Egypt. He took his army to Egypt because he was a high Mason. He wanted to get on into the pyramids and so on. And there were a tribe at one time used to guard that whole area. And that tribe itself fought various so-called Christian intercessors during the years. And in one of their major battles, supposedly they took off their white fezes and soaked it in the blood of their Christian enemies. And that became the symbol for eventually the Shriners and so on. So it's anti-Christian, if that means anything.
Yeah, I knew that there was some sort of, you know, dark history to it. I just
yeah, and they use the scimitar sword as well. Again, it's Arabic sword, yeah.
Right. Also, I have another quick question for you. In the Blade Runner film, it seems like it takes place in a Asian country.
It's not really. It's a future society where that they bring most of the many of the Asians over to the West as well. In fact, you'll find more of that if you read Arthur C. Clarke's 3001, his last novel, where he goes through the different features of people with the vast Asian migrations that are still to happen.
Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And you'll notice, too, in The Blade Runner, every scene it's always raining.
Right.
It's always raining, the sky is overcast because they want to bring out a shell around the world where it's perpetually cloudy, you won't see the sun eventually. That's their ultimate hope if they get their sciences advanced.
Okay. All right, thank you for taking my call. I'll let somebody else have their chance.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for calling.
Good night.
Bye now. Yeah, all these movies, again, that they're so predictive in their programming, and when the real things happen, we don't ask too many questions. We just think it's all quite a natural evolution. Yet in ancient times too, you know, you find a lot of folklore attached to even Aramaic and Judaic sources. There's a lot more folklore than you'll find in any Bible. It's almost a companion to it. And they talk about a time when the world was completely overcast with clouds and no one saw a star or the sun, so much so that it was forgotten for generations. And when they first broke through with the sun, that became the object of worship, and that certainly could be done. However, we've been through many, many ice ages before and warming periods. During the warming period, you get more and more rain occurring naturally as the southern, as the northern hemisphere warms up, and there's more evaporation from the seas, but it all eventually ends up in the poles and starts the whole process over with coming down as snow again and starts to freeze. That's how it goes round and round and round for millions and millions of years. So there's nothing new in this at all, and it should be taught in junior schools, at least when I was at school, but I've taken it all from the books. But I'm going to go into just that little article I was reading there and about the herd instinct and how they're easily managed, and just finish it off on page 2. It says here, these results parallel similar findings in ants and fish and show that very simple processes can underlie human behavior, commented Dr. Simon Reeder of Utrecht University, who reports the findings today in the journal Biology of Letters, or Biology of Letters it's called. In experiment, 72 people, 40 women and 32 men, were asked to complete questionnaires in one room, then taken to another room where they were to complete an experiment. We led them one of two routes into the room while talking about other things, and later asked them to return to the starting room, said Dr. Reeder. All but one person took the route they had been led. What we were surprised by was how strong this effect was, even when the alternative route was much shorter, he said. They preferred the long route even when the experimenter had drawn attention to the alternative route, or when the experimenter took the long route solely to pick up a fallen poster, eliminating the possibility that participants thought the experimenter had a good but unknown reason to take the long route. By asking participants to collect the next guinea pig in the experiment, the scientists observed that each person in the chain copied the route of the participant before them, a simple tradition that meant the alternative route was never discovered. In a fire or emergency, then, people would likely stick to the familiar evacuation route, even if it was much slower than an alternative. And that also means even if it was rather lethal, they still go the same way to their detriment. So there's always more reasons to do these experiments than the one they're telling you. But what they're looking at is mass psychology. And it's all to do as well with what's coming down the pike when they bring plagues in, because they'll be doing the same thing with traffic, all diverting you to other cities as they bring on this total war-type situation where it's chaos. Because we're dealing with the masters of chaos. These characters must destroy all of the old to bring in the new. The new has been well documented. They know exactly where they're going with it all. And they basically are going to make it all happen through a war-type scenario. That's what the war is all about. It's a war-type scenario. Now, I think I've got more from Oregon back on the line there because he was cut off. We'll see if he stays on here. Are you there, Mo?
Hello? Can you hear me, sir?
Yes, yes. You're cut off. Yes.
Okay, I was talking about that United States, Canada, Mexico, 103 cities will be collapsing by the 2012. And number of people affected initially is 171 million. And then if you go up to all the countries, continents, nations, and the world total would be 531 cities would be collapsing in the total whole of the world, and then 1.5 billion would be affected, and then because of them they have to immigrate to some other location. So as a result of food shortage, food water, and those things that we talk at the first time, then the whole world will be going to the state of emergency and collapsing.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Your phone's pretty bad. There's a bad line there, so it's hard to make what you're saying, but I get the gist of it. I'll be back with more after these messages.
Great host. Great topics, free speech at its best. This is We the People Radio Network.
Jobs down through history, they're very necessary when you want to get agendas through, and the public are rather stubborn. They don't want to change. They say that change is good, according to the big advertisers. In Canada, they're even better. They say, just do it, participation, just do it. They don't tell you do what, they say, just do it. Change is good. And of course, you might turn into a reptilian or something if you change. At least we can stand all the rain that's forecast. Much better than we do now. And speaking of rain and so on, there's a good site people should look into. It's called globalresearch.ca, 27 December 2004. In this title of this particular article, it says, The Ultimate Weapon of Mass Destruction, Owning the Weather for Military Use, by Michael Tudorovsky, 27 September 2004. Then it goes on about, you know, how they have all this technology for controlling the weather. And an article is taken from the U.S. Air Force AF 2025 final report. That's in there too. You'll find it. It says, this is from the Air Force now, the U.S. Air Force. Weather modification will become a part of domestic and international security and could be done unilaterally. It could have offensive and defensive and offensive applications and even be used for deterrence purposes. The ability to generate precipitation, rain and snow, to fog and storms on Earth, or to modify space and weather, and the production of artificial weather, all are a part of an integrated set of technologies which can provide substantial increase in U.S. or degraded capability in an adversary to achieve global awareness, reach, and power. Global awareness, interesting term that they've used there. And as I say, that's in this particular article about weather warfare. Now remember, that was published as well in major newspapers when the U.S. Air Force said a few years ago they would shortly own, not control, but own the weather. That's a bit better than just controlling it. If you control it, you may have to rent it. No, they'll actually own it. They might rent it out to others, mind you. And that's where that sort of stuff is going. And after that, I'm going into another one. And this is about Luxembourg. Luxembourg has just followed a few other countries along the roads to euthanasia. It says, Luxembourg says yes to euthanasia. This article can be found in the Daily Mail. Where's the date on it, though? The date. February the 20th, 2008. Luxembourg says yes to euthanasia. Luxembourg has become the third European country to legislate and legalize euthanasia. The country's parliament passed a law yesterday to allow mercy killing and assisted suicide by 30 votes to 26. The legislation is expected to come into force in the summer. Ouch. Luxembourg has chosen to embrace controversial euthanasia clinics where the elderly can choose to end their lives. Now remember, that was all shown in the movie Soylent Green, where I think it was the actor Meredith goes into a clinic to be euthanized. And well, here they got it. They wrote about all that time ago. And I think the name of that book initially that the movie was based on was Make Room, Make Room. It was actually a predictive programming to get us used to the idea of what was coming. So Luxembourg has chosen to embrace it in the clinics where the elderly can choose to end their lives. And you'll find a lot of people will be choosing for them. Jean Hus, a Green Party MP, well, what else, Green, eh? And co-sponsor of the bill, said a series of checks and balances would be built into the law. Euthanasia would be allowed only for the terminally ill. Now, that's a term that any lawyer can get round, terminally ill. See, living means that you're terminally ill. You're going to die as soon as you're born. You're going to die one day. Patients will have had repeatedly asked to die on documented and witnessed occasions. It would go ahead only with the consent of two doctors and a panel of experts. Here's those experts again, you see. Euthanasia is already legal in Holland and Belgium. Switzerland allows assisted suicide, but euthanasia is not legal. That's an interesting way to put it. Luxembourg's media said the law was a defeat for Prime Minister Jean-Claude Juncker, whose Christian Social Party opposed it. The Christian Social Party and the Catholic Church were against the euthanasia law, calling it murder, but we said no, it's just another way to go, said Hus. And once again, I'm not shocked, because everything that's going on right now, I was reading when I was a child in books that even then were gathering dust in libraries, because all the adults at the time were reading novels. So here we are on the road to euthanasia, getting people to die voluntarily. All down through the ages, the terminally ill have been helped along their way by their own relatives. And that's the only way that kind of thing could possibly be, if the person wants to go. When the state gets involved, you're in big trouble. When bureaucrats and bureaucracies get involved, you're in very big trouble. And that's where we are today with it. Massive trouble. The because they have a bigger agenda, of course. They simply want these kind of things on the books, firstly. And everything that was on the books and politics and government ends up expanding rather rapidly. So here you have it on a roll, and everyone else will follow suit because these are all part of the European Union. And they will mandate eventually to die. They make it so uncomfortable to be old, just uncomfortable to be old, that you'll want to die. You'll think your purpose is over. And they start withdrawing benefits and all the rest of it from the elderly. Because don't forget, too, they're called the useless eaters. And under the UN Charter, the definition of a good world citizen is someone who both produces and consumes. When you're retired, you're now a consumer, you're a burden on society. And they'll encourage you to pop yourself off. And I'm sure some big pharma company will get the deal for all the injections they do it with too, because they would miss out on that chance. What a world we live in, isn't it? What an incredible world where governments are doing all the things that they blame Adolf Hitler for doing. Isn't it amazing how they can always hold up Adolf Hitler as the numero uno tyrant we've ever seen in the world, while they go steamrolling ahead with the exact same agenda? And they're so good at it, in fact, that we don't see it for what it is. That's the difference. That's the only difference. We don't see it for what it is. They say that Hitler was already euthanizing or having euthanized all those who are mentally inferior in the homes. And so now I've seen the documentaries that were done back in the 30s, and they were certainly promoting that. They were ridiculing the whole purpose of keeping them alive, those who are mentally unfit or mentally retarded. And this is definitely happening, and they're encouraging doctors to simply get rid of them. And yet here we have a society where the lower classes, it's mainly the ordinary people, you see, who have abortions galore. It's the lower classes who will have the hardest time staying alive once they're elderly, because with the cost of living going up the way it is, they're going to have a hard time scraping by. And it's always the ones at the bottom. In other words, the ones that the elite, those with elite mentalities, would describe as being unfit. You see, it's the same agenda going through exactly the same way. With the whole New Age phenomenon, living room, Lebensraum, all of that stuff that we're pushing back then is getting pushed under Save the Earth, etc. There's too many people, and all those cries of terror and fear, etc. It's the same darned agenda by the same people that were behind many of the world's problems down through the centuries. Because this is a religion at the top, as I say, and I can't stress that enough. This is truly, truly a religion that's on the go. And the public go along with it blindly, thinking it's all quite natural. It's quite natural. I wouldn't be surprised if eventually they'll bring in a lotto, and or either a short straw to see who's going to be killed off and euthanized today as a useless eater, and we'll probably all accept it. Back with more after the following messages.